Hey there, the Westlaw Pirates, and welcome to the show. We're here to share our thoughts on Northwestern athletics and college sports with thoughts and analysis from the visceral to the statistical. We run our tailgate with the red pirate flag flying high above as we give no quarter, especially the fourth. I'm Sam Walter.
I'm John Lacombe.
And I am Eric Skouspell.
Well, guys, I mean,
what a weekend.
NCAA tournament. Yeah, what a weekend.
An emotional, high flying roller coaster of a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm spent, you know, and it's not the 17-hour drive I made from Chicago to Boulder, Colorado, where I'm recording from right now. But just the whole emotions of the weekend were just incredible.
I tweeted on Friday night.
We
were very, very tired and very, very happy, or like exhausted and very, very happy. And that was after like one game, and there were several more to come that were really meaningful this weekend.
Yeah, and I, one game later, I think basically that whole tweet stands true, right? I mean, in all honesty, I think the specific term that just about every Northwestern fan would go to is the same term that UConn coach Dan Hurley referenced both on the court and in the post-game press conference, which is pride. The pride of the Northwestern program, the pride of the Northwestern fan base. That's where we all are right now, is pride, right? Exhausted and proud. But I think even going farther and saying, like, Scuzz, I don't think too much has changed since that first tweet. I think we didn't get the result we all dreamed of against UConn in the second game, but I'm happy. I'm just proud. I'm proud and filled with just belief and positivity about what we've seen the past 2 years. And I know we'll get into it, and we're going to go through these two games, but yeah, exhausted, happy, proud.
Yeah. The 2 year perspective is really important there. This has been an incredible, incredible, unexpected journey these last 2 years. I mean, we, like, the three of us thought this program was left for dead coming into the 2022-23 season. Yeah. And they built a tourney team, won a first round game, just surprised the bejesus out of all of us. And then to come back and do it again,
just run it back, huh?
Oh, it's just like, it's been truly an unprecedented experience in my fandom as a Northwestern fan across all of the sports that I follow.
Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing weekend. You know, the fact that it was in Brooklyn too, like the number of Northwestern fans who were in attendance, especially for the FAU game, I mean, that place was going crazy. And, you know, it was such an exciting game. And I think, you know, let's dive into that FAU game just to get things started, because like at the end of that, it was just a whirlwind. I mean, start off with the first half. I mean, which is
basketball.
I mean, only insofar as, you know, we have to at least mention that we scored as many points in the first half as we did in 5 minutes of overtime. But like you could tell both teams were just so tentative and just couldn't get anything going. And then the second half was a completely different game.
So before we get into the specifics of it, I want to let you all know about a conversation we all had right before the start of this pod, which was a desire to be like, look, we are all coming out of, as we record this, or freshly from this Titanic matchup with the best team in the country that led to the end of this season and the end of the Boo Boo era and et cetera. And we had this conversation really stressing, being like, we have to make sure that we give this FAU game every bit of what it deserves because of what it was as a game. And I look at the first half you talked about, Sammy, and I'm almost like, it was such a gross basketball game in the first half by both teams. I mean, and every FAU fan and every Northwestern fan would agree with that. It was a mess of a basketball game. And that we went from that to a game that I know, Scuzz, you know, you were like before, like to this game that we will all remember forever, based on what happened in the second half and what happened in overtime, is just spectacular.
So, you know, the first half was ugly by all accounts. It was a rock fight. in every sense of the word. But I think what was compelling for Northwestern fans is that the story of the first half was not that both teams shot horribly. That's kind of the lazy story of the first half. The real story of the first half is that Northwestern absolutely decimated Florida Atlantic's offense. A team that was not missing critical players, a team that brought back all of their starters from a Final Four run the prior season, a team that had been scoring in the 80s and 90s most of the year and was expected to come in and push the pace. And not only did we slow them down and force them to shoot poorly, we completely unmoored them. They had 21 turnovers in this game. This was like, I've talked about it a number of times this year of the way Northwestern has had to reinvent themselves over and over throughout the course of the season, and specifically to manage these injuries. And this was the Michigan State playbook that came out here. It's not what I would have expected. I would have expected Northwestern to come out and just try to score at will. And it was clear their focus and their intent was disrupting Florida Atlantic. And they did it to a T. As discombobulated as Northwestern's offense looked against UConn's defense, Florida Atlantic could do hardly anything against us. The number of you know, the turnovers, the steals. Northwestern had 12 steals in this game. And I just that was an incredibly compelling start to this game. Even though Northwestern wasn't scoring, they were controlling the game and exerting their will in an NCAA tournament game against a Final Four team from the year before.
Yeah, and you know, leading all the way, you know, through the second half, and then the way they. The finish. I mean, the last 5 minutes of this of the second half, and then all of overtime. Like, I mean, what? I mean, we said it already. Like, just what a roller coaster. But like, seriously, like, where do you start? I mean, the flagrant foul.
I feel like we've beaten this dead horse into the ground over the course of this pod, but we'll continue to do it because I know you all believe in it just as much as we do. Shared experience. And the skeletons that live in all of our closets. Oof. And the shared trauma that we all have. And when that flagrant happened on a, you know, where Northwestern had a 5-on-4, and look, like, it's a 5-on-4, there's a guy hurt on the floor. Like, you know, Boo had an initial reaction of, like, just instinct to be like, oh my gosh, we had a 5-on-4 and that's dead. But I mean, like,
the announcers had a reaction to, like, mm-hmm. many, right. many times stating they should not have blown that. That was right. The wrong thing for them to do.
Right. And then to go back and then review it for a flagrant and have it be a mess. Right. And to have it go on. And then the play where the ball didn't go out of bounds and they blew the whistle and effectively, you know, it the net effect was a turnover against Northwestern. These things would be bad enough in the crunch time of a tourney game on their own. But they land so much harder for us because we're all still back, way back in 2017 with Zach Collins' friggin' arm going through the basket. And it's just every Northwestern fan is sinking deep into their own psyche, being like, oh my God, is this going to happen again? And credit to Florida Atlantic, right? I mean, like Scott said, our defense was unbelievable in this game. And at the end of the day, Florida Atlantic did turn it over 21 times. But both of these teams played way better basketball in the second half. And Northwestern built that lead, but then Florida Atlantic came back in. And they were climbing back into it. And then they got those, you know, those calls went their way. And then they took that lead at the end. And, you know, all of our hearts were in our throats. And from 10 seconds left in this, you know, in regulation through the end of this game in overtime, we all were reminded at level 11 volume what this team is all about. And I mean, that's like, you talk about pride, like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, Brooks Barnheiser, right?
Yeah.
You know, after what, you know, the weird, like, over and back, like the turnover where Martinelli tried to, you know, set a pick for Boo and it caused a backcourt violation. to the foul of Golden, who then, misses the free throw, opening it up for Barnheiser just to take it to the net with 10 seconds left to tie it up. And, like, if you haven't seen the picture that was taken, I
go to our Twitter page.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sure who took that picture, but, like, oh, my God. Barnheiser in front of three FAU guys just taking it to the rim. Just spectacular shot. So, mad shout out to the photographer who nailed that one. But, and then for FAU to be completely discombobulated with an opportunity to win it at the buzzer, but like they never got a good look and they just were kind of all over the place. It was bizarre that they didn't, were they out of timeouts? I mean, do you guys remember? Like, I was surprised that they were as discombobulated as they were.
Yeah, that was so weird. Davis walked the ball up. And I kept waiting for, like, does he think they're up one? I'm like, is he waiting to get fouled? I couldn't understand. And, yeah, it was just, like, lackadaisical. But I think you're right. I think they were discombobulated. A guy on the other team had just hit an absolutely massive shot. And they were just discombobulated and didn't get the – and credit. Like, we blocked the final shot. I forget if it was Langborg who blocked it or what or who it was. But, yeah, I mean, Brooks, what a finish for him. And – just to add, before we go on to overtime and just the joy fest that was overtime, which was highlighted by guys who were not Brooks Barnheiser, Sammy, I specifically wanted to mention that you mentioned this iconic photo, and yet there is a possibly just as iconic photo coming out of the second half of this basketball game, also involving Brooks Barnheiser, which was... he dove over the broadcast table chasing a loose ball. And, we were all hearts in our throats. We were all so worried about him. And then all four of his Northwestern teammates came and pulled him back onto the floor. And there's a photo of all of them. And it's just like your heart kind of, you get a lump in your throat looking at it. Because it's, if you needed a better symbol of the brotherhood of this team, it would, you couldn't find it. But yeah. Brooks had an iconic second half, and then, John, we went to overtime.
John, all I could think of in that moment was the way you keep quipping about Barnheiser hunting down, whoever skipped leg day. And yeah. For him to take, like, that really intense shot on, like, mid-thigh and effectively, play through it without missing a beat was pretty awesome. I want to highlight, just digging into the specifics that led up to his layup at the end. So Boo Booey hits a layup with 4 minutes and 50 seconds remaining in this game. And at that stage, Northwestern has a 6-point lead. And they don't score again until Barnheiser hits that layup with nine seconds left. And it was, it was a period of time of, the nightmares that all of us have had as Northwestern fans. And in the moment on my couch, surrender Cobra pose and everything, trying to figure out if I need to go refill my beer, if that's the karma that has to happen, or if I'm sitting on the right cushion, or if I should switch my t-shirt, like in that moment, I was really bummed that I thought we were going to lose this game, but I also still had so much gratitude for where this program had taken us this year and for the fight that they showed in this game. I mean, just looking at is it Vladislav Golden?
Yeah. Vlad Golden.
Yeah. Vlad Golden. Imagine if Matt Nicholson was healthy for this game.
Oh, wow.
Golden had 19 points. Most of those came from the free throw line, but he was 5 of 6 on the field goals he took. He had 4 blocks. And then, of course, the UConn game, right? Their center was an absolute insane game changer, right? But the point being, like, this was such a hard matchup for Northwestern. And in those last 5 minutes, of course, I'm having the whole Gonzaga goaltend situation going through my brain, and every horrible call that's ever gone Northwestern's way, ever, like moments where, the football team, stole defeat from the jaws of victory kind of situations that we've all experienced so many times, that shared experience, John, you talk about. And yet, because of what we've seen this team persevere through, knowing where they've been, knowing that the depletion that their roster has gone through over the past 2 months, understanding and accepting like this was still great. And then for Barnheiser to hit that layup, I posted a picture of my heart rate from my watch later. Like it absolutely peaked out at the moment that he hit that layup. And then overtime was this glorious opus of I mean, that's like the apex.
Hang that overtime in the rafters, man.
The apex of Northwestern basketball.
I mean, Florida Atlantic just has to realize that resistance was futile.
Well,
it was the Borg.
I want to make one more comp before we get into that overtime, because there's one other time this season where a depleted, mangled, hounded Northwestern team was able to force overtime through like sheer force of will, and that was at Minnesota. What, like 2 days, 3 days after the Purdue loss?
Mm-hmm.
And they managed, they had a rough first half. They managed to claw their way back and just force overtime by the skin of their teeth. And then Minnesota just steamrolled them in overtime.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Scuzz, because what is my defining moment of the overtime against the Minnesota game, in the Minnesota game? A bedraggled, exhausted Ryan Langborg front rimming two free throws in overtime of that game. And we didn't get exhausted, bedraggled at
anybody.
The end of a ridiculous stretch. Anybody. And we got apex god mode Ryan Langborg in the overtime. It was this overtime was over so quickly. I mean, like, Northwestern, it was like as soon as the game went to overtime, Langborg was like, I won't be missing anything. I'm going to absolutely go off.
Let me
throw you a absolutely legendary teardrop fadeaway. And everything just worked. They, you know, using the shot clock, rotating the ball around, they kept finding Langborg. He kept draining shots.
Northwestern literally did not miss. They did not miss a field goal. They did not miss a free throw all of overtime. They scored 19 points in overtime.
No, I think they missed one free throw. One free throw they missed in overtime.
I mean, it was...
By point stands. They scored 19 points in overtime. The same amount they scored in the entire first half.
It was amazing, and it led to that crescendo feeling of Northwestern just coming out of halftime, spent the entire second half and all of overtime getting better and better and better and better, and it reached this crescendo where
Blake Smith missed a free throw with 11 seconds left. Yeah, we were up 10. We were up 13. I don't. I it just. I don't count it.
And Sam mentioned it earlier, but the crowd was going bananas in that game. And we heard, and you know, so first of all, the Northwestern turnout was phenomenal. But then also, I mean, we heard from people after in the game that all of the fans, including the heavy UConn contingent, had kind of gone back and forth. And they'd been pro-Northwestern, but then when FAU was mounting their comeback in the second half, they jumped on the FAU bandwagon. But then when Northwestern... From when that flagrant happened to when Barnheiser hit that shot entering overtime, that was a totally behind Northwestern crowd. And when they showed out in overtime, it was thunderous. And we could hear it, you know, at home, back in Chicago or wherever. You could hear it. I mean, all of you who were there, you were thunderous. And it led to, you know, just this absolutely epic finish to this game that, you know, it was such an advertisement for Northwestern and Northwestern basketball, everything that we could have dreamed.
The joy that you could see on the guys' faces. Like when Brooks threw that kind of no look bounce pass to Langborg for, I believe, his third three of overtime or second three of overtime.
And he's just grinning.
Yes. Yeah. At, like that was the moment. I mean, that's when it was his third jumper or his third field goal, but it was his second 3-pointer, and that made it 70-59 with a minute and a half to play. And that was just like, that was the moment. And like, for everything this team had to persevere through in the last, you know, 2 months, from the Barry injury through the Nicholson injury, Langborg missing a couple of critical games down the stretch, it to culminate. I mean, it didn't culminate. Obviously, the season went on to another game, but to have that apex moment, that joy that they shared at the end of this game is what I will never forget.
And yeah, I mean, just like, and seeing the crowd, like, and seeing everyone's just response and just the emotion coming out of that game, knowing what was coming, like, you know, it's like, you know, in 2 days what's waiting for us. I mean, I guess we didn't know immediately after, but you know, a couple hours later when UConn just absolutely curb stomped Stetson, broke their big hat in half, we knew what was there. And then all of a sudden it's like the emotion, and then almost immediately following, like, all of the, like, I can't tell you how many different clips of Miracle.
Yes.
I watched, and like everyone knew. It's like
I'm UConn, so glad you brought this up.
Yeah, but like UConn is freaking amazing. And nobody had any delusions of that. Like, UConn is phenomenal. We knew that. We knew where we were. We knew we were coming in shorthanded. We knew they had like just 3, maybe 4 NBA players on that roster. I mean, even Collins, you know, said it in his presser, like, you know, he basically quoted, you know, Herb Brooks in that press conference as well. So, you know, and like we knew that UConn was there, but we all was like, but why not us?
It
right?
It was beautiful. It was so beautiful. I'm so glad you brought it up. Everyone knew we were about to play, let's be honest, one of the best college basketball teams this century. I mean, they're an absolute monster, and they're the defending national champion, and they're 31-3. And it was, I think, if you look at the history of Northwestern sports, to understand that the choice to embrace the moment and treat it the way Sam just talked about is a choice that everyone made. And there was no groundswell of, now we get fed into the buzzsaw. Oh my God, I'm terrified. Oh my, we could have. There's anyone could have. I would begrudge no one for that. It's the logical approach. No one did it. Everyone chose to embrace, right, the miracle nature of it. The USA, USSR nature of it, right? That we're going to live in this dream, and we're going to back this team with everything that we have, and what happens, happens. But it was just belief. It was 2 days of belief. And again, that's a choice you all made. You chose to be positive. You chose to stand behind the team. You chose to not have trepidation. And I mean, again, I'm proud. I'm proud of Northwestern Nation and what they did in the gap between those two games.
I've talked a lot about legacy throughout the course of this season, and what the legacy of Boo Booey and Barry, Barron and Audige, Langborg now, what this team for 2 years, like their legacy, it's not about the NCAA tournament appearances or wins. It's not about the points record or all the Big Ten wins. Like, the capital L legacy is the way they've transformed the Northwestern basketball program, and not just on the court, but everything that surrounds it. And this is a perfect example of why, because a large reason that we all felt comfortable believing and were so willing to steer into that is that we watched this team knock off number one Purdue each of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And we've seen the way they've showed up in the biggest moments and in the biggest spotlights. We've seen them come back in a second year when, I won't say expectations were high. I mean, they were picked to finish, what, 8th? But
doing the thing again is way harder than doing it the first time. And we've seen Northwestern fail at that over and over and over and over again across so many different sports. That belief is, in addition to everything we saw at Welsh Ryan this year, that belief is another proof point on the way that they have reshaped what the words Northwestern basketball mean. And that's like the coolest thing for me coming out of the last 2 years is the way that that has changed.
Absolutely.
If you or a loved one is seriously injured by someone else's negligence, hire Kent Simpson of the Simpson Law Group. After over a decade prosecuting murder cases in Chicago, Simpson opened his own firm focused on wrongful death and personal injury cases. He specializes in car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and other transportation accidents, as well as construction accidents, medical negligence, slip and falls, product liability, and more. Millions recovered for clients. No fee unless he wins. The Simpson Law Group. Compassion, empathy, and vigorous advocacy. Go to SimpsonLawGroup.com or call 312-332-2107 for a free consultation. And go Cats.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to like dissect the game. I mean, like UConn just like within 5 minutes is like, oh, okay, well.
Well, yeah. I mean, the UConn piece of this, right? Let's just get it out of the way right away, right? We all are intimately familiar with what one of the number one ranked basketball teams of the past 2 years looks like from a basketball perspective. And the adjective I'd pick would be gross, and I think you'd all agree, right? And UConn is just the antithesis of that. It's beautiful basketball.
I'm gonna say it a lot more bluntly, John. If UConn and Purdue play for the national championship this year, UConn's winning by double digits.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I agree. I mean, I think we talked forever about the talent on the team, right? And Sam just mentioned it, the amount of draft picks on this team, the amount of individual talent, and they function like a well-oiled machine. This is a team that could not buy a three-pointer in this game, and some of that's credit to Northwestern's dogged defense, but some of that's just UConn missing and the amount of high percentage baskets that offense generates. It's incredible. I mean, they just are, yeah.
Think about all like the things that people complain most about the NBA is I think about like my 25 years as a sports fan, right? It's ISO ball and hero ball. And, you know, it's all about the stars. And when that comes to college, it's like the worst version of it. You know, teams that, it's all about one player, or it's all about like, you know, getting a single one-on-one matchup, and everybody else moves to the edges and clears out, and it becomes boring and stagnant. And that's not exactly true about the NBA anymore. I think some of the rules have changed there. Some of the way that the game has evolved have been really good. But
that's not UConn.
Well, yeah. When I hear, oh wow, this team has seven lottery picks, you know, or seven guys that are going to be easy pros in the NBA. I think about that pretty quickly. I mean, like, you know, one of the secrets of basketball, Bill Simmons talked about this in the book that made him, you know, kind of rocketed him up in people's eyes as a basketball talking head. But he talked about the secret of the game. It's about the camaraderie and the connection within the team, the chemistry within the team, because you've got to figure out how to share the basketball. You've got to figure out who's your scorer, who's your setup, who's your rebounder. Like, there are different roles. Not everybody can score 30 points a night. And when you've got a team as talented as UConn, the risk is falling into that where guys are competing for the ball. They want it in their hands. Oh, I'm not getting passes. I'm going to start to check out, or I'm going to, you know, my attention's going to wander. And UConn is the complete antithesis of that. A team that is operating in perfect harmony with itself. They do not give two shits who scores or how they do it. For them, it's all about the team game. And that, like, a testament to Hurley and the way that they've built that program. Like, it was poetry in motion to watch that.
It was.
And, you know, you see it in the box score. They had 20 assists on the game. Like, they were distributing the ball all around.
I'm surprised they didn't have more.
I know,
they,
right?
They scored 29 right. baskets, and I'm surprised there weren't 29 friggin' assists. And, like, it was unbelievable.
And the flip side of it, too, is I think we were all stunned. I mean, stunned, I wouldn't say stunned because it's not like this is shocking with the team, you know, a team that potentially is a back-to-back national champion. But I was personally not prepared for just how good their defense would be. It was unbelievable. Best defense we've seen this season. They were so aggressive and so active. Hurley talked about it during the game. He talked about it after. Like, they were very aware that we had a depleted roster, and their goal was to wear us down. And on the defensive end, it was obvious that Northwestern runs so many high screens to get Boo going and then try to get a pick or try to get Boo some space so that he can create. And UConn just again and again and again showed they did more than show on those screens. They would just double every single time and then rotate and rotate. And it's like, look, especially obviously in the first half of this game, it totally flummoxed Northwestern. But again, it's UConn. It's just you, like, again, like Scuzz said, I mean, if I'm Purdue or, let's be honest, anybody else, I'm like, this is an absolute freight train. And yeah, and in the first half, it snowed us under. And that's with UConn not being able to hit threes. And I remember thinking, like, there was a period of time where I was like, I want to, like, we need to find a hot hand. But then there was that reality check that's like, look, Langborg may have a hot hand, and at the end of the day, he was 3 of 4 for 3, but guys couldn't get open looks. I mean, they just swarmed. And again, it's credit to them. Like Scuzz said, it's a team with NBA talent that doesn't play like everyone's looking for a bucket. They're a monster. Credit to them, and that's why they're moving on.
I've never, like, obviously speed is an asset in basketball. Maybe not the same as it is in football. You know, you don't hear the term speed kills the same way you do in football. But in basketball, I've always associated it with a player like D. Brown or Terrence Shannon, right? The ability to get out on the fast break and just terrorize defenders, blow by them with speed, right? The speed that UConn demonstrates on defense was absolutely astounding, and it's why they were able to double Boo, and then literally nobody was open. But even that bit, like, you guys talked about it with Scott last week in the preview of the tournament, that we knew how good this team was, and they looked even better than we expected, but we knew how Herculean of a task this would be to do something to UConn. And we said, you guys said it, we're gonna need them to have an off night, and we're gonna have to play just about perfect. And Northwestern played with a hell of an amount of pride in the second half. They didn't play perfect. There were a lot of turnovers. They were, I don't know if tight is the right word, but they weren't in sync to start the game. A lot of that, of course, is UConn's defense and just the blistering, wall that Northwestern was faced with. But of the 10 three-pointers that Northwestern attempted in the first half, they only hit one. Like, at least 5 or 6 of them were decent looks, and we needed that, like, Wisconsin start from Boo, or the just the incandescent, you know, shooting performance that we saw a couple of times this spring in February from the Cats for them to really have an opportunity in this game. And it just wasn't there. And you know what? I am totally at peace with that. It like, to see them come back in the second half and play with such pride and heart and tenacity to push UConn in a game, even they knew they were going to lose, is fantastic. And, you know, you got to tip your cap to what was, and will probably be the best team in this tournament and a repeat national championship for the first time in a long time.
And you guys talk about the defense, you know, the speed of the defense up top, but the reason they could just commit to that was that they had this monster in the middle.
Yeah, Klingon.
I mean, Klingon was just like, oh, you want to come anywhere blocks. near the rim? No, that's not how we're going to do this.
Eight blocks, and it was probably more like 10, because there were at least a couple that, I mean, like, Tracy Wolfson said it to him directly in the postgame. Like, there were two more that didn't get on the score sheet, but you still got 8.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, obviously, I think so much of this from a Northwestern standpoint, we want to focus on the second half. The one guy I want to mention from the first half specifically, though, is Nick Martinelli. At a time when no one could get anything going in the first half, we had 18 first half points in this game. Martinelli had 8 of those. And he was the one guy that was working his offense. And this is with, I think, Klingon rejected him at least once. But Martinelli was very much like, I'm going to play my game. I'm going to try to get my mid-range game. I'm going to try to get into the paint and do Nick Martinelli things. And it's just one of those moments where it's like, we're going to see a lot more Nick Martinelli. And that's awesome. But never forget that this is a guy who scant time ago and going really as to the start of this season, right, is still a guy who most of the nation is like, this guy was going to go to, I think, the SoCon. We were his only major offer. And of course, this all of these things echo with Boo also. But, and now this is a guy against UConn in the first half being like, I'm the one guy who can, you know, somewhat reliably get us at the bucket in the first half of this game. And it's like, Nicky Buckets, man, like from nowhere, right? No other offers. Obviously, he was a big high school star locally. We all know that. But as far as the nation's concerned, this is a guy with no other big offers, comes into Northwestern, came into this season with Northwestern Nation not really knowing what they were going to get out of him, and then absolutely puts his stamp on it, and then it culminates in this first half performance where Nicky Buckets is the one guy getting buckets for us from the first half, which was really cool. We mentioned it at halftime of the game, and was awesome going to the second half. But I think the single big thing for me with the second half of this game is, I mean, you could even say it arguably at halftime, but UConn started the second half with a 9-4 run, and it was 49-22. And you knew two things at that point. And one was, Northwestern's not winning this game. The second half has barely started, and we know it's over. Northwestern's not winning. There's no possible way. And UConn's not going to take their foot off the gas, and they're the best team in the country. And we were, I mean, I was personally worried. I was like, please don't let us get a result in this game that betrays the kind of season this was. Please do not give us a score that betrays what this team was about and what this team dealt with to get through this point. And instead, I mean, again, it's like your heart swells to watch what we saw in the second half of this game, because instead, Northwestern reminded all of us what they're all about. And with no hope of winning and facing a team, you know, a dominant basketball team firing on all cylinders, they dug down and they outplayed UConn in the second half of this game. And I think we'll all be proud forever of what we saw in the second half of this game. And you know, when people think Northwestern basketball, they're going to think of performances like that.
And something I want to touch on is like the way that the announcers were talking. Like, you think about the last 5 minutes or so of a blowout game in the tournament. And, you know, the fact that it was more, they were talking about Northwestern and just the heart and, like, you know, showing the emotion in that hug between Chris Collins and Boo Booey when he was taken out with a minute or plus to go. And to, like, the entire conversation was about Northwestern. It wasn't about UConn. And I can't
Nobody
remember.
Said a goddamn thing about Auburn during the second half of this basketball game.
Yeah, right. Amen, brother.
Exactly. But like that just tells you even more. Like, we're not a flash in the pan. We're not just like, oh, you know, they had a nice win, you know, in the first round and now, okay, they're done now. This is a team that is now getting national recognition, and, you know, a team that is, you know, it's not inconceivable. Like, they're not, we're not going away. Like,
and you could hear it in the crowd. Like, the crowd knew it. They were so behind the team. When Northwestern, I mean, like, all of the Northwestern fans, 100%, literally and figuratively, knew the score. Literally in that they knew we had no chance to win, and figuratively in that, right, like Sam's saying, like, they've all been on this journey that Scuzz has outlined so many times. And they're all so full of pride, as we are, about what had happened, that as soon as Northwestern, as soon as Barnheiser started hitting those shots in the second half, right, and started getting going, and Langborg hit that three, we were just in. And I mean, I'm talking like in Beer Miscuous, where we were all gathering, you know, like we had our gathering, everyone was going bananas. And that's going bananas in a game we knew we wouldn't win because of what this team was about and what we were watching. And I mean, and right. And then it culminated in that moment when number zero came off. And I mean, there was no dry eye where we were. And I'm sure that goes the same for all of you too. But man, when Boo came off and Collins grabbed him, man, that's one of the all-time great Northwestern moments.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. And I, you know, we've talked about legacy. We've talked about everything. Like, I feel like we've been talking about the you know, this Boo Booey journey and what he's meant to the program, what it meant for him to come back this year. I remember at the beginning of the season talking about it being like a bridge year. Like Boo Booey's bridging the success of last season and infusing that with guys like Martinelli and Barnheiser and Nicholson and Barry again this year. Like, maybe they won't make the dance, but like, this is so important and critical for the program. And then for this year to play out the way it has, you know, amplifies that so much. But he has meant so much to this program and to all of us as fans. And I talked earlier about the way this team has shown up in big moments and big games. And so much of that is Boo Booey. He has shown up in those games. Like, look at his stat lines from those three Purdue games the last 2 years. Holy shit. Yeah. What he did against Illinois. What he did against FAU, even after a tough first half. He has meant so much. And Trey Demps talked about how important Boo Booey has been to this program on Twitter after the game. Mentioned that he said, you know, I don't think there's been any player more important to their program. He cited a couple of guys who have won multiple championships at different schools. But the way Booey has transformed himself first and this basketball program and this school second and third is great. I don't know how verbatim this is, but there's a Kendall Baker has a tweet. Whether this is lip reading or, you know, a closer read of what Collins said to Boo, captures it as thank you, man. I love you. You're like family. We did this together. You'll always be family. I've got your back for life. You're the effing goat. And it's like, what more can you say about Boo Booey and what he has meant to this team and all of us as fans?
Have you ever thought about building a Westlaw Pirates-like community for your business? If so, we've got your solution. Teamworks Media, a brand marketing and content company, is here to help you tell your brand story better. Better yet, you can work directly with the founder, Jay Sharman, known on this podcast as Lake Posts. The same expertise he's brought to brands like ESPN, the Big Ten Conference, and Northwestern University are now available to you in an affordable way, directly with this Wildcat superfan. Contact Jay directly at 312-446-9435 or jay@teamworksmedia.com to learn how to elevate your brand story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, like, it's going to be weird not having number zero in the lineup next year. But it will not be weird when that number gets put to the rafters as soon as possible. We're going to see it forever.
You're never going to see another zero on the court for Northwestern. That's for sure. It's going up there. It's just a question of when.
Is Raphael Davis's Boo Booey statue fund? How's that coming along? Yeah. I want to contribute.
Yeah. So this is something too, and I know, Sammy, I know you're going to take us into the Lake the Post segment in a second. And I know that later we're going to kind of return to what I'm about to say in a second too. But you mentioned the statue fund, right? And everyone joking about that. I wanted to specifically mention relative to Boo right here that I'm personally happy inside that Boo's era ended in the NIL era. Because one thing that, as Scuzz meant, like, we all feel so indebted to this person. And it makes me feel good knowing that at least in his final year, through NIL, through TrueNU, through et cetera, right, that all of us who would give anything to give Boo a piece of what he has given to us, that the Northwestern community and like through NIL, like Boo was able to get funds. That now, like, as he enters this crazy uncertain start to his pro basketball career, right, that he has a little extra stability because he was able to actually get income from his final year at Northwestern, right? And who knows? Maybe some of those funds are down payment on a house at some point or something that, right, helps him and the family, you know, and his family down the road, right? And that some of that was a piece of what he got while he was at Northwestern, right? It makes me feel a little bit better knowing that this guy who has given all of us so much, that the Northwestern community was able to give something to him in his final year, and that he's going to take that with him into his professional life and find hopefully a little bit of extra stability and just ease as he moves into the next phase of his life post-college because of that. It makes me feel good. So again, like I'm like, I think when we think of like, what are the good things? What are the positives about NIL? It's that right there. It's the feeling that Northwestern was able to give a guy something who gave so much to Northwestern.
Well, I think that just leads perfectly into our Lake the Post segment brought to you by Teamworks Media. You're talking about NIL and talking about you know, how we move forward and where we go from here. Jay, in conjunction with TrueNU, I mean, you mentioned them before. I mean, we've had Jacob Schmidt on the podcast to talk about TrueNU, the NIL collective for Northwestern, and they're putting together the Remembering Ryan Field auction and fundraising event. You know, I know a lot of people talked about, you know, the fundraiser that was had to, that was selling off parts of the stadium.
Not a fundraiser.
Well, yeah, it wasn't a fundraiser. It was an organization. It was a nonprofit organization who was given a bunch of stuff and was able to sell it for them. It's a nonprofit organization. You know, they do great work. Not to take anything away from them. But what Jay and TrueNU are putting together is a fundraiser that all of the proceeds are going to TrueNU, and all of those proceeds are going to the NIL fund, going to help the next wave of Northwestern student athletes to come in. You know, it's no mystery that we are in a day and age where NIL and what you're able to provide is huge. And, you know, players are transferring to places where they're able to get NIL opportunities. This is not, you know, it's now all above, it's at least somewhat above board. Now it's not under the table anymore, but that's where we are. And, you know, Northwestern's NIL program, while, you know, is doing great work, absolutely, but we're going up against some incredible other programs that have just deep, deep pockets in their NIL collectives. And, you know, we need to be able to take care to A, take care of our own, and B, attract other other players to Northwestern. And, you know, John, you said exactly it. Boo was able to do this in an era of NIL where he absolutely could have gone somewhere else and done what he did, you know, wearing someone else's colors. But the fact that he stayed, and with the NIL situation that he got here, just goes to show that Northwestern is a player in the NIL game. So Jay and Truman, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, there's just something even. Not, I don't disagree with anything you just said, Sam, but there's something that, like, for me personally, that's even more meaningful and important here, because I think it is so easy to talk about NIL and I think get caught up in talking about it as if it's pay for play and, oh, it's legal now, as opposed to the $100 handshakes that used to happen in the past. And I just like, not that any of that is untrue, but I kind of reject it as a guiding narrative as to why this is important. College sports is a gargantuan business. Gargantuan. And relative to 30 or 40 years ago, gargantuan isn't even like an appropriate word to describe how much money is being made and changing hands in this space. And yes, the coaches are very, very important. And they are also extremely well compensated. And yes, the players are getting a free education. But let's be honest, that just doesn't carry the weight that it used to. And I it's not just about, yes, of course I want Boo Booey to stay at Northwestern. Yes, of course I want Northwestern to be an attractive place for potential transfers and big time quarterbacks and all those other sorts of things. I also think it's very important that Northwestern's mantra about 4 years for 40 and the power of the education at this excellent school and the community that has stood up here. Those are also very important things to me too. And I don't think these are mutually exclusive. And I think there's an undercurrent of, oh, you know, we need NIL to compete and all that other sort of stuff isn't as important anymore. It's just about the money. No, it's all still critical. But there's such there's a need to recognize that, and we just talked about it for 40 minutes before we got into this section, of what Boo Booey and these other players, not just the coaches, what Boo Booey and these players have done for this program, for this school, for us as fans. And John, you said it earlier, to be able to give them a piece back of what they've done for us. That's not just a diploma. That's not just, you know, their recognition in Evanston or on campus or in, you know, extreme situations, their jersey in the rafters. That's really meaningful to me to be able to do that. And that the structures are in place that these athletes can get a piece of what has become a enormous pie of funds. It's just the right thing to do, period.
Absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes you can lose the forest through the trees and be like, we have to hit figure X to retain player Y. And it's like, this is Northwestern. These guys love this school and we love them. And it's like, look at Boo. Look at the way Boo talked. Look at the way all of these guys individually tweeted about the Northwestern family and community coming out of this season and coming out of that UConn game. Like, these guys want to be here. And like, look, like, yeah, sometimes guys have financial considerations. And again, but it's like, we have the opportunity to support guys who love this university. They love us. We love them. And like, to kind of contextualize this, we were talking about that, you know, like coming out of that 2017 season, that super ballyhooed 2018 recruiting class that at one point was Jordan Lathan, Miller Kopp, Pete Nance, and Ryan Young. And that was the big one. And of course, that class ultimately was defined by guys who didn't stay. And I would say right off the bat first that Pete Nance would be the exception. Pete Nance had never got the results he was looking for, but played 4 years at Northwestern, gave everything for the school, etc. And then, you know, ultimately went on to North Carolina and just never quite got to where he was trying to go as a college basketball player. But we obviously know, like, Miller Kopp became defined by his Indiana experience, and Ryan Young has been at Duke for years now and is still in the NCAA tournament right now. And because of all that, that class was ultimately defined by where all of those guys ended up at the end of the day. And in the wake of that, over a course of 4 years, Northwestern built a back-to-back first-round tourney-winning team on the strength of guys who were found, and then those guys stayed. And that starts with Barron and Bowie, immediately followed by Chase Audiz transferring in. Then you get Nicholson, then you get Barry, then you get Barnheiser, then you get Martinelli and Hunger. and then you finally get Langborg transferring in. But that entire run of guys leading up to Langborg transfer, that entire run of guys is defined by guys who were found by Chris Collins, diamonds in the rough, who then committed to this Northwestern basketball team for years and stayed and built something, right? And I think when we look at NIL and we look at that kind of thing, and Boo, of course, being at the head of that list, right? And be like, it's not about finding some perfect amount so that guy X stays. It's like, look at what these guys have given. Look how proud we are. Look how you can support them. These guys who want to stay at Northwestern, they want to be here. They don't want to be someone else somewhere else. They want to get their Northwestern degree. They want to be part of this. And now we have a chance to support those players. Like, again, like that's what Scott says. I mean, it's like there's the financial piece of it. There's wanting the players to get a piece of the pie that they so rightfully deserve. And then there's also just like what we as a Northwestern community want to do and want to contribute to these guys that mean something to us, right? And I think, it, like Scott said, it's all important. It all matters.
So to that end, TrueNU is putting together an auction that is being called Remembering Ryan Field. So Jay was able to salvage a bunch of incredible artifacts from Ryan Field before it went down. And there's, you know, it's just some incredible memorabilia. And this auction is going up, launching on April 8th at 9 a.m. Central, including the memorabilia and some of the artifacts from the stadium. There's also a number of other really, really cool VIP experiences. One that we're able to talk about right now is the opportunity to get two tickets to Late Night with Seth Meyers with a VIP meet and greet, two nights stay at a hotel in New York City, and an incredible dinner, as well as two Northwestern Stadium Club seats. And this is just one of the many VIP experience packages that is going to be going up for auction. That is going to be an incredible way to help support TrueNU, to help put some additional money in, well, to put money in the pockets of these players who we, you know and love and want to be able to support. Yeah, that's just one of the many VIP experiences that are coming that we're able to talk about at this point.
I just want to mention, like, relative to the other, and again, like Scott said, or you said, like, there was a nonprofit, like, selling Northwestern stuff. Like, that's great. Like, that's a nonprofit, like, fundraising, etc. But, like, it feels like everything that wasn't bolted down and then some was in that, like, soap dispensers from the bathroom were in that auction. Like, everything, like, this is, I can't stress this enough. If any of you know Jay, know Lake the Posts, this is literally, to say this collection in this Northwestern NIL, like TrueNU auction, to say it's curated by Jay would be an understatement.
This ain't no yard sale, folks.
Yeah. No. Jay, like, this is a guy who bleeds purple going through that stadium and identifying every single thing he considers special. And those are the kind of things that are in this auction.
Well, he talks about he called in his own crew to help him, get some of these things out, like trying to remove bolts and screws that have been embedded in concrete for literally 100 years. Things that felt that they were like just melted into the ground, fasteners, et cetera. But he's got signage from every section on the west side of the stadium. Signage from select sections on the east side. There's some very large maps of Northwestern concession signage. He's got stadium club seats, box seats. Also, things that you – this is not like the training table or a
a cart that they used to move food around on. This is stuff that you saw when you walked into the stadium, things that you recognize. This is a great way to grab, you know, I don't want to call it one of a kind collectibles, but things that seem pretty mean. If you're somebody that was a big time fan of Northwestern football, you spent a lot of time in that stadium like I did. Like, I'd love to get my hand on a 128 sign from where we sat for all those years.
Right.
Like that sort of stuff is really cool and really meaningful. And so if you're at all interested, I think the most important thing is to sign up for the True NU newsletter at www.truenu.org. That's how you're going to be able to get information about this event, which is going to be happening in a few weeks in early April. And that's, you know, it'll also connect you into the broader True NU initiative to understand how they're operating, what they're doing, all those good things. But this is going to be pretty neat. And the best part of it is that these funds, these dollars are going to go directly back to the athletes that we love to cheer for and that represent our school so incredibly every day.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have said it much better myself, and, you know, definitely stay tuned. You know, we'll have more as we learn more, but like you said, the best way to get involved, the best way to find out more, truenu.org, sign up for the newsletter, and all of the information on the auction, on some of the other VIP experiences that are coming are going to be there. So again, Jay, thank you so much for your support of the pod. Can't wait to see all the other great things that are going to be coming out in this auction. And yeah, truenu.org to check it out.
If you have a big NU fan in your life and they have a birthday down the road, they have an anniversary down the road, they have Christmas down the road or Hanukkah or whatever, like a major moment or holiday in their life or something, like, start thinking ahead and planning ahead, because this is that kind of auction.
I think this is actually a reverse case, because I think the people listening to this podcast are probably the ones that want this stuff. So, like, yeah. Tell your people. Right. Tell all That's your people, right. Like, hey, guys.
Start dropping not-so-subtle hints. Right.
You can give me a birthday present for, like, the next 5 years all at once. Just go to this website.
Yeah.
My wife is literally doing spring cleaning right now in our house, and she's throwing out like everything that's not nailed down. So this will be like the first salvo in movement the opposite direction.
I know, you know, we have the spring sports to talk about. Softball, lacrosse had a big win at North Carolina tonight. Obviously the loss in overtime to Penn State over the weekend. We'll get into, you know, the spring sports much more, starting up again next week. We'll have more on the True NU auction, remembering Ryan Field. We'll have more on that as well. Anything else to mention before we get out of here tonight, Cass?
Yeah. So briefly, again, like you were saying, like we must, because we're clearing out the paint for basketball as well we should, not talk about the other sports. I do want to mention, like, there'll be plenty of time, like Sam said, to talk softball. Kelsey Nader and Kansas Robinson absolutely obliterated the softball this past weekend against Michigan State. And, I mean, an absolute explosion from them, from the team in general. We'll get a chance to talk about that. The place that I kind of wanted to finish up, and I think it's something else we wanted to talk about. But first of all, a shout out to Beer Miscuous. You know, I was there. We had watch parties for the FAU game and then for the UConn game. It was fantastic. I think you all know we've started up a relationship with them, particularly with Austin, who runs Beer Miscuous and is just a dyed in the wool, like, Northwestern fan. We've been going there. We did 4 football games there. We did these tourney games there. It was awesome. One question I fielded from multiple people at both watch parties while we're there, which is something that I think we definitely wanted to mention, is people coming up to us and going, does this thing about football games on the lake have legs?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes.
Yes.
It yep. absolutely does. Will we land the plane on it? I don't know. But we can pass along to you that we know that NU wants it to happen. And if it can happen, they're going to make it happen in some capacity. There's a big piece of working it out with Evanston, and there's a big financial piece also. And it's big money to make it come together because there are a bunch of different pieces. If they have to give up X amount of box at X amount, you know, at that could be at some other stadium, if it was at Soldier, if it was wherever, based on whatever the limited capacity of this venue is with this temporary structure set up. I think so many Northwestern fans would come back to that with being like, yeah, but no one was going to go to those games and everyone is going to go to these games. I have no particular disagreement on any particular point there. I think if this can come together out on the lake, even if it's for non-conference games, even if it's for a Miami of Ohio at the start of the season, et cetera, et cetera, that place is going to be friggin' packed. Because what an opportunity to go literally watch Northwestern football out on the lake. So it might happen. This is real. Northwestern's working really hard on it. And, you know, let's cross our fingers, you know, let the Northwestern powers that be know you support it. Send emails, you know, if you... I know that there was like an email address going around, I think in like the N Club, Northwestern Alumni Network, like absolutely send those emails, let people know how much you support this and how much you're behind it. But it's real, people, and it very well might come to be.
It's real and it will be spectacular.
It might be spectacular.
I wanted to hit just to close the loop that I've been talking about through the last few weeks, and that's, you know, we know Boo Booey is the all-time points scoring leader at Northwestern, but where did he end up in the Big Ten pantheon? This is since 1947-48. Boo Booey officially number 17 all-time in Big Ten scoring. He was a scant 6 points away from jumping up to the next slot, and he finishes 26 points short of his brother Taylor Battle at number 14. But top 20, man, that's pretty dang good. And we'll be, you know, obviously we'll be talking about Boo and following him as much as we have, you know, with Sherna and Juice and others as they've gone on to careers post Northwestern. Boo's going to have, you know, plenty of basketball to play going forward. But I think, you know, we probably don't have time to talk about it right now, but there's a point that you made on Twitter, John, that I would love for you to expand on here. And it's just, you know, kind of, we're going to be entering what I would call maybe the third phase or fourth phase of, you know, Chris Collins' tenure at Northwestern in entering the post Boo Booey era. And you talked earlier about this team that was built primarily through recruiting classes and development of players over the past, you know, 3 to 5 years. And I just wanted to, I wanted you to end on just hammering that point home as to where we go from here.
Right. And I think that's it's a big piece because people are like, right, where do we go from here? And I think, again, we've talked about this, and I think we are all on the record of being very straight shooters when it comes to Chris Collins, right? And I think when we were in the dark ages, like, that was real, and we were all there, etc. But you have to, and this goes to what we touched on earlier, you have to look at the success this team had over the past 2 years and understand how much went into building that success. Boo was at the front of the line, yes, but this is 4 straight years of recruiting classes, right? And you can go a year later than that and go to a walk-on in Blake Smith, who ended up playing huge minutes for this team this season, right? And be like, yeah, you have like a big-time recruit like a Ty Berry or like a really high 3-star guy like a Brooks Barnheiser, right? And those guys are really big pieces. But you also have a guy like a Matt Nicholson, who was not a super heavily recruited big man, who became crucial for this team over these past 2 years, right? And of course, you have Boo, but also Martinelli, these guys that Northwestern wanted when no one else in the high majors wanted them, and they developed into these huge pieces of these teams. This coaching staff is already doing what needs to be done. We just have to keep it up. We have to keep finding the right guys in the recruiting portal. If they're 4-star guys, awesome. If they're high 3-star guys, awesome. If they're 0-star guys that this coaching staff sees somewhat something in, that's good enough too, because these guys are doing it the right way. They're getting it done right now. If there's a big transfer that Collins identifies and he's able to pull that guy in, I mean, this guy has Chase Audige and Ryan Langborg on his transfer resume right now. Like, Collins is finding the right guys. So it's, we got to keep it going. NIL's a piece of that. Fan support's a piece of that. But it's like, when you're looking at, like, right, like Scott said, like, what's the next phase? The next phase is for this team to keep doing what they've been doing. But I think we should all buck up and, like, have that, like, again, like, hearts swell, pride swell, and be like, that ought to be pretty damn doable. Because look what this team has accomplished. Look at the brand Northwestern basketball has built. Look at what Chris Collins and all of these assistant coaches are getting done right now. And look at what the rest of the nation has seen from this basketball team and be like, the foundation is here. Everything this team needs to do to grow on and continue to do what they've been doing over the past several years, it's there, and we can keep doing it.
Well, not only is it there, but the difference now, and I've harped on it endlessly, so I'm not going to go back through all of that again, but those four recruiting classes you're talking about, John, they did not experience the Welsh Ryan that we all experienced this year and toward the end of last year.
Yep. Mm.
That, like you said, fan support, but like that atmosphere. I mean, we heard it from the football recruits when they were there for, I forget which weekend it was, which game it was, but like the football recruits were all in town for one of those massive home games over the weekend were singing the praises of the experience at Welsh Ryan. And that is not something that has ever existed before. And to be able to recruit on the strength of not just the development of the program, how they've performed, what they've done on the national stage, beating number one, going to the tournament, winning games, all that sort of stuff. But to be able to point to these thousands of fans that have come out and scream their head off for you and give you a real home court advantage. This is a phrase that has never existed in the history of Northwestern basketball. So that's how this coaching staff can continue to build on the excellent work that they've done putting together what we've seen the last 2 years. And it's how we're all a part of it at the same time.
Absolutely. And we'll go ahead and leave it there for tonight. Head to our website, westlawpirates.com, where you can leave comments and questions. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @westlawpirates. Email the show, westlawpirates@gmail.com. Tune in next time as we give our visceral and statistical views on Northwestern athletics. Look for us in the west side of Ryan Field flying the red pirate flag, because we give no quarter, especially the fourth. John Lacombe and Eric Skousbein, I'm Sam Walter. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.